Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
We are back again.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. What this weather. My God, man.
I know we talk about the weather a lot, and you guys are probably sick of hearing about Kansas City weather, but we have a...
Okay, we're not making forecasts here.
No.
we're living in the reality now.
it's literally old men yelling at clouds at this point. But yeah, no, we went from Indian summer this week to like...
cold fall.
Right, yeah. No, this is... It's not like Halloween fall, like even though Halloween was literally this last weekend.
Yes.
It's like this is Thanksgiving fall.
Yeah. I mean, and there was just hot,
cold,
yeah, cold.
No in between.
I mean, and,
like, we had some nice weather a couple weeks ago. Like, you know, we didn't talk about it on the show, but we went out to Lewisburg just to kind of hang around and do fall stuff.
Yeah, it was great. They had a festival there, and Jeff got himself some apple cider there. I'm looking forward to see what you're going to do with that.
Yes. I have so many projects that are kind of on the slow burn kind of situation that we need to work on, but... yeah. Oh, and, you know, we've got, I'm trying to work on some winter projects like that distilling thing we were talking about before.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, too.
You know, we're shut in, you know, sticking in for the winter here.
So oh, no, I can't go anywhere. Whatever am I going to do?
Most days, if I didn't have to take my kid to school and pick him up, I would probably leave the house like once a week to go to the supermarket and be perfectly fine with that. But, you know, I'm an introvert in
my wife likes
borderline feral sense.
Likes using the rubber on our tires on our cars. So I'm not quite in the same boat. All right. So first thing on first, Meat House is sponsored by Bacchus and Barleycorn.
Yes.
And we'd like to thank them.
Yeah, they've been, they approached us when we were talking about getting this started and said, hey, do you need a sponsor? And oh my God, it's been so great working with them. If it were a larger company, like a, you know, I don't know that there are huge homebrew companies.
I don't think there are. But if it was a large mid-sized corporation, we probably would have said thank you. No.
Yeah, we would have gone past. But you know, small business, they are passionate about what they do. They have anything you could ask for as far as ingredients or equipment or just the
general knowledge and recipes of.
Right. Yeah. No, you can get so much stuff from them, and it's they are expanding all the time, which is fantastic.
And they're not just passionate; they are knowledgeably passionate.
Right.
They can not only, you know, oh, this is so cool to do. This is how you get to here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even better than just the pure passion of the job. It's just they know the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, they've been around for, I think we calculated 57 years.
Yeah.
Like such an asset to the home community. So it's great to work with them. And hey, that said, you know, whether you're buying online, you know, you can check for their link in the recipe notes, the show notes.
The show notes, yeah.
They're not always recipes in the show notes, but there are often recipes.
But I'm hoping we can put more recipes in as we come across them because, you know, when I take recipes, I don't just follow the recipe. I want to take my own spin on it. I hope you guys do too.
Yeah. No, we publish recipes. In the, you know, the previous iteration of the show, JD was generally against publishing recipes because reasons. I forget exactly what his justification was, but since you and I have restarted this, we've taken a stance of like, look, we know that, you know, we're going to publish recipes and you guys are going to do your own thing with them.
And we're absolutely fine with that. We want you to do that. If we give you a direct recipe of ours and you make it better, for goodness sakes, let us know.
Yeah.
We want to make it better too.
Tell us what you did. But my thought is that, you know, we want to encourage iteration and growth in the community. And part of that is just, you know, hey, here's where we started. Do a thing. You know, use a different yeast, use a different honey, add an extra spice or a different fruit. Cool. Great. Whether you guys are
starting or...
Right. And if you're shopping online on their website, you can find the link in our show notes. Or you go there in person if you're lucky enough to live close enough. Or, you know, maybe you make a...
pilgrimage,
weekend trip for one of their monthly customer appreciation events. Those are fun as hell. Just, you know, maybe have a designated driver on the way home.
Yeah. You need it.
There will be a lot of people there very willing to share. You can use our code MHP10. And get 10% off of your purchase. So it's even better.
Yeah, and you're just determined not to let me take another streak in, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Pardon me. So here we are. It's just past Halloween. Just past daylight savings time, which is...
Well,
I'm still recovering from that. But the need the oh, also I'd like to thank our listeners. We
Yes.
haven't done that yet, and that's something very important to me. We've gotten a little more traction, and we're really happy to see you guys writing in, telling us what you think, telling us your experience, and actually, we're going to talk about a few of them.
Yeah, no, I we had a couple people just reach out randomly this week, and it's been nice. Kyle Ducharme, he's been a guest on the show in previous iterations of the show back when I could do interviews, and we're working on that. We should have some traction on like getting a third voice in this podcast.
And there's some people that I want to talk to, and that Jeff probably knows better than I do, and we're going to get some people in here to help you with more perspectives, as it
Yeah,
were.
like expand this a little and have some conversations outside of just, what you and I are doing
Yeah.
around our meeting.
And if you've been listening for any length of time, Jeff and I are kind of busy with this. We really like doing this, so yeah, imagine putting one or two more people in on this conversation. Holy cow.
Now, Kyle reached out, and Kyle has kind of taken up the mantle of the Iron Bee since, the previous iteration of the Meat House kind
Kind of
of went
faded a bit.
right and went on a break. And man, with three of us organizing a competition, that was kind of a pain in the butt. And
Yeah.
just me doing it, no.
Okay, fair. Well, if you want to start this up with Kyle again, I am willing to step in. I've got some free time. I can help.
Well, and maybe. But Kyle has kind of taken it upon himself to do the Iron Bee stuff and keep that idea going. And I thought it was a fun idea. Granted, it was kind of my idea, but I'm a little biased there. So he reached out to us and encouraged us to, hey, this is the idea. You should talk about this, and maybe you should both make some entries for it, things like that. And
Okay.
well, I don't want to talk about it if we're going to enter it, because then everybody knows what we're doing, and it's not really.
We can talk about the R&B in general and make our own entry quietly.
Right, and maybe we talk about the ingredient he mentioned, which, if you want to get in on that ingredient, I think you can just mention Kyle, or you can just message Kyle Ducharme on Facebook,
Okay.
and I think he will gladly hook you up there. So,
So anyway, we want to thank you all of you for listening and sending in your comments. We appreciate that. If you have any suggestions you'd like to hear about on the show that we can bring up to you and help you out with, we're more than happy to.
yeah, we'd love.
This is educational, this is helpful, this is community.
Right. The two of us are here having this conversation, but it's a wider conversation too, between like you guys listening at home and us, like, seeing what's up with the community. And I think one of our topics is just something I found that's been kicking around a lot on, let's be honest. We all have some downtime, during the day. I'll kick around Facebook or Reddit still and see what's up. And I found a surprising number of people that were interested in this topic that we'll get to eventually
Okay.
here. But,
Okay, meat of the day. Now,
meat of the day.
I'm kind of thinking this is important to get to because we've stumbled over our words. We haven't even started on our mead. So let's at least give a good excuse for our stumbling, okay?
Yeah, no kidding.
We're doing Sap House Meadery again. They have the pear, cranberry, spruce tips, and red currants mead, and
Yeah.
it's called
Paranoid.
Paranoid.
Paranoid, PEARANOID. And this was from their, this is the like the not necessarily a Renaissance Fair bottle from the Renaissance Fair release.
This is a red amber color from what I'm looking at here.
It's almost pinkish, really.
But very clear. You can see clear through it. Very nice. I mean, but yeah, like I said, I call it red amber. He calls it pinkish. I can see his point, but I don't see the same color.
Maybe like a really light rust red.
Okay, I'll buy that one. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I get parents' first tips on the nose.
Yeah, but I'm not smelling cranberries or currants.
Well, cranberries is a lighter smell. I could maybe pick out some cranberry in there. A red currant is a little. I don't know that I've tasted red currant alone in a long time. I seem to remember it gets used in jams a lot,
Oh,
especially
yeah,
like
it
in
does.
northern parts of the country.
Okay, so very light taste.
Yeah, it's light, it's dry.
It's actually quite nice. I'm not a dry person. That's nice.
Yeah,
I mean,
I mean, you do dry right, and dry can be very good, and it's just a trick to do dry right. Pear is obviously really light in that.
I can taste the cranberry. It's right behind the pear, and it's making strong statement there.
Right. There's a little bit of the spruce tips really rounded out with that kind of, it's a little bit tart, a little bit kind of not minty, but kind of
It
in that.
spreads across the back of the tongue for me.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of sides and back, especially like right after you swallow for me.
Not tasting current though.
Yeah, with the cranberry and the red currant, those are I feel like those would be very similar flavors. That might be just a kind of a fruitiness that I'm getting out of this.
I'm not saying it's not there, but I'm saying if it's there, I think it's a support flavor. But it's actually very pleasant. I'm kind of, and Jeff has been going getting Sap House shipment, for a while now. And
Years and years at this point.
but I'm rarely disappointed in their work.
Yeah,
There's
no,
been a few I'm not fond of, but they usually do a really good job.
the worst you've said, I think, ever has been, and it's not my favorite. It's still pretty good, but it's just I don't care for this one.
But it was a flavor thing, not a quality thing.
Absolutely, yeah. No, this sometimes Jesus, you can't get 4 bottles a quarter for years and years and years without getting something that goes, ah, no, that doesn't appeal to me. I mean, I think I've still got a rye barrel aged one of their barrel projects upstairs, and I'm just like, ooh, rye.
Maybe I should bring my wife in for that one because she loves rye.
Yeah, I think we should do a like a four
Spouse
person,
episode.
right, and just get some feedback from our
Significant others.
our better halves as far as dealing with our BS and the drinks that they get to,
Let's be
sip on
fair
as a
here. They give
solace.
as good as they get, man.
That's true.
Okay. Maybe not quite as much as they get, but they do good.
So, like I said, I was kind of just, browsing around Reddit and Facebook and things like that, and I found a couple comments that, they struck me as, hey, we could talk about this for a little bit. So, this is a little bit old, this one, from Robert Choi over on the Modern Mead Makers group, from September 14th. It says, hello, my 5 gallon blackberry honey traditional started with an OG of 1084. I fermented it dry with an SG of 1.001 so I can control sweetness level during my fermentation process. Great.
Fun.
That's
Sounds good so
absolutely.
far.
That's what I recommend. I waited a week and took another hydrometer reading, and it remained the same. I racked off onto the lees, into secondary, added K-Meta and then K-Sorb. I then placed my mead into a fermentation chamber to cold crash at 35 degrees Fahrenheit with just a standard S-shape airlock with star sand inside it. Should I be concerned about oxidization when cold crashing if I fermented the mead to dry?
In my personal opinion, I don't think that's going to be a big issue at this point.
Realistically, oxidization, as long as you are careful with your move to secondary, use a the little the pump, and you're not like splash racketing in there or just pouring it into to secondary,
I don't
that
think,
is your major risk for oxidization.
and I don't think you, from what you just told us there, I don't think you're in trouble.
Yeah, I
I think
think
you're good.
it I f granted from the details that I'm getting out of this, it's not all of the details, but I feel like his process is pretty solid.
Yeah, sounds
He's
good.
got a solid understanding of what he's doing, so I'm
Yeah.
pretty sure he's used, a good, auto siphon and tubing, and
Yeah, I
he
mean,
did things right.
if we're wrong, email us back and we'll alter. But from what you've told us, this is about what we do.
Right. The realistically, also, he's already got it on K-Sorb and K-Meta.
Yeah.
Potassium metabisulfite,
Yeah.
potassium sorbate, and those have a level of antioxidant character to them as well, if I'm
You did
not
not know
mistaken.
that.
A level of it. I know a number of people that are worried about it, like the Bacchus recipes you get from Bock's and Barleycorn, little 5 gallon batches of beer. Jackie always added some ascorbic acid into his kits for those, just to protect against oxidization. Now, oxidization in beer is a little worse than oxidization in meat. Oxidization in beer, from his experience, from my experience as well, it tends to taste more like wet cardboard. Whereas oxidization in mead, from my experience, again, is more of a sherry flavor. I can kind of overlook a little sherry flavor. I have a harder time overlooking a wet cardboard flavor, especially when it's a light beer,
Well, I've tasted cardboard flavors even in mead, so
Yeah,
oxidation's a thing. I don't know if it's the honey or what the process that makes it better than beer, but from what I've heard, what was his name again?
Robert Choi.
Robert, from what we've read that you sent us, solid.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're gonna have a big problem with oxidation. Just make sure when you whatever you're doing when you sweeten your whatever you're doing from secondary, just limit your opening time. I mean,
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I work out of buckets, so when I open it, I've got an 18 inch to 2 foot diameter bucket I'm working out. So there's air on top of it, but everything below is in pretty good shape, and I haven't had a re if I manage to get to secondary, generally it's pretty good.
No, the only thing I would really caution about here, and bear in mind, you're going from probably an ambient or near ambient fermentation temperature to, I think he said, 35 degrees Fahrenheit for cold crash,
Yeah, cold
right?
crash. And
And we'll talk about cold crash
I
in a
wanted to talk
second,
about that
because,
because I hear it a lot and I've never really done it,
right.
mostly because I don't have a place to cold crash, to be honest. But I want to talk about that.
Sure. So, and you do totally have a place to cold crash. We're getting into the cold months.
Okay, yeah, except outside. Okay. 3 months, 3 4 months a year, sure.
Yeah, or a basement, or the wherever. You've got options, and it doesn't even need to be that involved. Anyway, the caution that I will throw out here is we're talking about probably nearly 40 degree difference between ambient temperature and refrigerator temperature, so to speak, on this cold crashing, and so that's going to affect the volume of air at the top of your fermenter. Watch out for your airlock. Make sure if you get the if the volume of the air inside your fermenter decreases to a point where it sucks some of that star sand in, that you're not getting an open air path. You really don't have to worry about things like bugums and crud like that in a fridge, really, but that is a vector for allowing oxygen into a mead. And if you've already stabilized it with the sorbate and metabisulfite,
I think you're good.
well, you don't have any like new CO2 being produced there.
Yeah.
So there's, if you've got an outside air source, then you have a vector for oxygen to get in and create oxidization. That's the only concern I would say you really have here.
If your airlock's good and your pressures are good, I think you're golden. I
Yeah.
really do.
Well, and this is your winter months reminder. Hey, we're all switching to heat now. The inside humidity of your house is changing. Keep an eye on your airlocks this winter.
And keep them
Topped up, top,
topped
yeah,
up.
because
Yeah.
this is
Once they go dry, you're in trouble.
my own negligence. I have lost several batches just to, oh, the airlock dried out, and then some kind of bacteria got in there and made a little biofilm on the top. And one time it worked out nicely for me. Other times it has been gross, and just don't want that.
Yeah.
Save your investment in honey. Ain't getting any cheaper these days, man.
No, it's definitely not getting any cheaper. All right. So do you have anybody else you want to talk about there?
Let's talk more about cold crashing
Let's talk
while we're
about
on
cold crashing.
topic.
Okay.
So.
I know cold crash is you put it in a colder environment, like 40 degrees or so, 40 to
Yeah,
45 degrees.
usually we're talking about putting it in the fridge.
Yeah.
And for a 1 gallon little jug, easy to do,
Yeah.
right? It's not a small thing, but
No.
you can generally fit it in a fridge.
Yeah, well, if you can fit the your apple cider in there, you can fit this in there. It's
Sure,
yeah.
sure, sure, sure.
But problem is, I my small one's a gallon, yeah, but my big one's 10.
Well, and let's be real. You're not gonna get a dolly cart and wheel the 10 gallon out onto your back deck to cold crash in the winter.
No, I'm
This
not.
is not something that's realistically everybody's gonna be able to do with every batch. But you can get a 1 or 3 gallon just out on your back porch and let it sit for a few hours and get cold.
Okay.
Why would we want a cold crash?
I know there's a benefit, but since I've never used it, I don't honestly know. I mean, I think it would settle debris.
Yes, that's one of two reasons we would reasonably want to cold crash. For one, it settles debris, it helps with the clearing, so to speak. The other thing is that it slows down yeast activity.
So if after you kill the yeast, it's not even important that much.
No, and realistically, yeah, does cold crashing clear the mead a little faster? Sure. You know what also clears it real damn fast for like $4?
Doing fine.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
That's
Yeah.
what I've been using.
Exactly. And I've not really needed to cold crash since I started using DualFine because it works. It's so good.
It does it overnight. I mean, I've literally put it in before I went to bed, woke up next morning, and it went from, murky pea soup to absolutely crystal in one evening, one night.
I mean, you know, then we've talked before. I know you filter from time to time. You have the pads, you have the ability to do so, or I'm not sure if you have a filter, if you're borrowing it from
I
somebody,
borrow a
but
filter.
yeah. Regardless, I don't filter. I don't really feel a need to because, like, I get enough clarity from just the dual fine that it looks pleasant enough to me. I don't really feel a need to get it any clearer.
I
And
do it out of greed.
yeah, well.
I want to filter out I want to get as much of that liquid out of the bucket as I can, including what's in still around the debris at the bottom. I'm greedy as all get out about that. I want my mead back. I mean, I'm not quite the person who would hit the back of a fly and make it spit out my beer, but yeah,
I mean, I just kind of pour that into a glass after I'm done racking and say, this is brewer's treat. So,
okay, fair enough.
I mean, I'm still harvesting, but I'm getting a little of a B12 from those spent yeast cells too, you know.
Yep, and actually, sometime in the near future, I'm going to bring up what my son said about the debris, because he wants to know what can you do with that.
You got options.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll talk about that too in a little bit here, but let's go back to cold crashing
Bull
before
crashing.
we get distracted
Too far
again.
field again.
So yeah, no, the cold crashing, you can use that to clear your mead
Okay.
and you can use that to stop yeast activity. Now, a number of people have said, hey, I'm going to stop my yeast once I hit an ABV of about 10% and leave some residual sugar in the mead. You can do that. You can cold crash it to kind of knock them out for a little bit, but it's not going to kill them, you understand. And you still need to stabilize at that point. This is not the way I like to do it. And it's, you know, personally, I don't have the time or the mentality to, like, every few hours check my mead to see if I'm at 10%. I mean,
Which says a
so.
lot, because you're one of the smartest people I know, man. So, but you got your life is life.
I got stuff going on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, anyway, I don't know a lot of people that have that kind of obsessive
Medication.
mentality and the time to do it. So my thinking is, you know, we're saying 10%. It's probably going to be somewhere between 9.5 and 10.5. We're playing horseshoes and hand grenades here. We're close enough is good enough.
Well, I'll be honest. When you told me, let it go dry, kill it, back sweeten it, and because not just because you're my friend, because I knew you knew what you're talking about, I just ran with it and never looked back.
Yeah. Well, and when you do it that way, granted, there are some times where you'll have a little extra residual sugar, and, you know, instead of going from, you know, 1080 to 1000, you're going to hit like 10, or you're going to hit 0996, right? You're going to go a little above board. That's fine though. And you still have the ability to put the start and the finish into a alcohol by volume calculator, and you know exactly what the alcohol by volume of your mead is.
Yeah.
We're not guessing. You're not playing. It's about, you know.
Yeah. Now, when I say a 14, I may be a 14.4 or something like that.
Sure.
I round off.
Right.
But
Is it, I mean, we're talking about homebrew. Is it
yeah.
that important? No.
And honestly, when I'm adding my sweetening, I'm tasting it at the time. I put it in and mix it thoroughly. I taste it. That's about where I want it. I'll leave it for overnight. Taste it again. If I'm still good, I'm done.
Yeah, usually I will rope my wife into saying, hey, I need another opinion. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, and I do that to my wife a lot. My wife has a better sense of taste than I do. And I'll say that without reservation. And I need her help generally. But am I close to the same sweetness I did the time before, the 2 times before that? Yeah, kind of. But, I'm doing this because I like it, not because I'm trying to be exacting. This is about, oh, this tastes good. I'm going to stop here. And that's where I stop.
Right. So yeah, tell me about what Rowan asked about the
Okay, he
yeast
was
cells
okay. When
or
you have
yeast
the debris
stress.
in the bottom after you full crash in your case, or I do the dual fine, what can you do with that detritus, the filtered, what I would normally filter out? What can you do with that? Is there something you can do other than, can you just bottle it and sell it as a B12 alcoholic drink, or
I can't imagine it would be that tasty. It
no,
has a kind of a
it's not the taste that, okay, I've tried it time with various baths I've done. The taste is roughly the same. The texture is profound.
It is. I can't remember ever actually consuming mud as a child, but I imagine rolling and playing in mud. I got some in my mouth, and it's kind of how I imagine the texture of
It is thick.
mud.
It is thick.
Yeah.
I mean, think of it as a thin tapioca or oatmeal without lumps.
Right. Yeah.
But that's kind of what it is.
Basically, depending on how good of a yeast cake you got at the bottom, it can be very much that. So as far as what you can do with it,
What can be done with the yeast cake? Live or dead?
well, it's dead at this point.
Yeah.
It's dead. So, one of the most obvious things to do if you guys have like any kind of a compost heap for your gardening purposes at home, toss that in there. I would think that would be a good source of nitrogen for your plants. Maybe some potassium as well. I don't know exactly, but that was,
I've been missing out if that's the case,
yeah.
because I've talked gardening and I do have some compost and I'm sitting here, I've been missing out.
Yeah, no, it basically, if you are kind of, what do I do with the dead yeast? What do I do with the spent fruit? What do I do with the spent grain? What do I do with spent hops, or the stuff that remains after your brewing process has been completed? Compost is generally a pretty safe, it's a pretty safe option for that.
Yeah, I'll be honest, my fruit, yeah, I throw it in the I throw it for I plant directly around my plants, but I've never thought about the yeast cake.
Yep. Yeast cake is, well, it's a biological organism. It's those yeast are probably already autolyzing, or where single cell organisms break down and die, rot, whatever, in the that yeast
They're
cake at the bottom.
composting.
You could definitely add that to your compost and make it a little richer that way. Another thing you can do, you probably, if you've been to the Whole Paycheck or natural grocery places, they have a product there called nutritional yeast. And I know a lot of like the vegan cheese alternatives use that
Yeah,
as a
a lot
kind of a
of, yeah.
flavoring thing. I would think if you can get that dehydrated and like spread out on a baking sheet, you can basically make the same thing. I know a number of people will also do something similar. They will dehydrate or otherwise dry it out and use that as an alternative to Fermate O, because it's basically Fermate O. The major component of it is just yeast holes, the dead yeast cells.
Okay, I didn't know that either.
They add extra proprietary stuff to round out the chemical composition of it and make it a little bit better of a nutrient source than
They
just.
also make it so it's consistent because I can't imagine using that as your Fermento. That batch would be consistent, but it would be different from batch to batch.
Well, the thing is that the majority of what you're getting out of this is just the nitrogen from the yeast holes. And dead yeast is dead yeast. There's little billions of those little cells across the smear of yeast that you're putting in a baking sheet and dehydrating. I would say go low and slow. I don't know what the like putting it in your oven at 350 for an hour would do to the nitrogen, but I can't imagine it'd be that good for it.
No.
I would think it would give you some off flavors too. I mean, there is definitely a level of experimentation that is possible here. I'm just not sure I want to do
Yeah, that's fair. I know I don't because
it.
my life is it lacks boredom. My life lacks boredom. I'm pretty exciting all the time. Well, at least my life is. Yeah, I may not be what I mean, but my life is pretty exciting. All right, good. So I thank you for
Sure.
that. I'll either tell my son or have him listen. It might be faster to tell
Yeah, no, he's got a couple options, and I think they have basically done the primary thing they're going to do, but you have options as far as what to do with them, and probably the compost is the safest of those, because it's
The worst that's going to happen, it won't do a thing. That is the worst thing that's going to happen.
right.
It's not going to do nothing.
Yeah. Well, and now that I have a way to do like high pressure sterilization, I might think about adding that to some of my mushroom substrate for growing, because I've had a little success with that. I've been trying some different processes, and it's another one of those things where, man, I just need more time to do stuff and more energy to do stuff at the end of the day when I'm not otherwise,
Yeah, well,
beleaguered with work and.
yeah. I've got 2 of my 3 years of marriage and gone, and I'm still busy, man. So.
never stops.
Never stops. It's,
you know, go back to that time management episode we had a couple months back.
And I'll be honest, I don't want it to.
Yeah.
My you know, Pope said, "Oh, my life is so dull." Mine's not dull. And I'm so happy it's not. All right, next.
Yeah, so I found another one, and this is just a couple days old, actually. This is from user veggie_doggo on rmeat. Picked up some prickly pear syrup. Any good pairings? Says, I've loved prickly pear since trying it to make cocktails from a Warcraft cookbook, of all things, as well as the Shiner beer using this stuff. And made a syrup from scratch once, never again. I have since found a well-reviewed syrup that Total Wine sells. Is there anything that might make a good addition to go with it? An additional fruit or flavor like lime juice or mango? Left to my own devices, I feel like I may go too off the rails and overcomplicate it.
Okay, that is a good self-awareness there.
Yes.
That's excellent self-awareness. I'm very proud of you, Reggie. You did a good job of just catching yourself before you made that mistake.
Veggie dog. This is Reddit, so we don't know the person's name. We just have.
I thought you said Reggie. I apologize. But Veggie, your self-awareness, I commend you.
Absolutely.
Slow clap there. Yeah.
You need to be aware of your shortcomings there, and I, too, would probably do the same.
Yeah.
So I am curious about this, because we have a Total Wine, like, literally 2 minutes down
the street. Yeah, we do. Yeah, I guess we may be going after this.
We probably do wine tasting stuff.
It's that time of year. Oh, yeah. I wasn't planning on leaving the show sober anyway, so. But, okay, pairings with
prickly pear.
Okay, I know prickly pear has a watermelon strawberry bubblegum flavor.
Yeah,
kind of. And the strawberry bubblegum is a support character in that.
And I can see why he doesn't want to do the syrup himself, because prickly pear has all those little spines on it that, like, if you go to the grocery store, they've got little tongs, so you can get either the pads that, I forget what they call those in Spanish for, like, Mexican home cooking, but there's
the flat ones?
Yeah, okay. The flat pads, or sometimes they have the fruit. It's very seasonal, unlike, you know, apples or pears or whatever we can get from greenhouses all year round.
Despite the fact we are in November, I still get apples from the city market.
Yeah.
And they're good, don't get me wrong, but holy cow.
I mean, there are enough greenhouses growing enough apples that we can get those year-round, anytime we want, and modern life is convenient.
Oh, it is nice.
In ways that, like, our ancestors even 100 years ago could never contemplate, you know?
But, okay, so pairings. So, let's talk about, the main flavor would be, like, a watermelon.
Watermelon-ish. I feel like it's a little sweeter than watermelon for me.
Okay, I like that.
But, the only, like, real concept I've had of prickly pear has been, like, a few candies, I think. And then, like, over my honeymoon, we went to Malta and we got, like, it's kind of like a liqueur. I want to say it was in the kind of like a heavy schnapps, 20-ish%.
Okay.
And it was flavored with prickly pear, because prickly pear is, it's kind of like bamboo. It doesn't grow there naturally, but it's kind of taken over in a lot of the wild places there. So they have prickly pear, you know, flavored
everything.
Beers, flavored liqueurs, things like that. I remember having a kind of a bitter aftertaste, or a bitter, like, secondary flavor to it that wasn't necessarily pleasant. And I don't know if that was part of the prickly pear flavor itself, or if that was just kind of
because we've had things become bitter out of our brews.
Yeah, this might just happen. This might just be like, oh, they're cutting some corners in the production process.
Okay, I know prickly pear, you have to peel the outside off the rind, as it were, to get to the actual fruit, like a watermelon per se. Did they not do that? Because I know for a fact, because I've had a friend of mine who is Mexican, goes, here, try this. It was the rind of the cactus.
Uh-huh.
And it was bitter.
That's very possible. They may have just, like, well, and, like, when if you're harvesting a prickly pear yourself, you know, you gotta deal with those little spine
things.
And, like my wife reminded us as we were, you know, getting up and going, oh yeah, you just take a blowtorch to those, you blow those off, burn those off.
Okay,
great. I, you know, I don't know if the folks out in Malta were, you know, hand harvesting these and then going through the process of, like, individually peeling all of them.
Or just crushing them.
Yeah. Maybe they just put it in a grinder and took the whatever resulting juice or syrup and put that in with some alcohol. I have no idea what the production process looked like.
Okay,
I
didn't
get a chance to ask it.
I'm going to say, make sure you don't use the rind, because that sounds like a likely scenario there if you're going to do it yourself. But you're using this a made syrup.
Yes, it sounds like this is a pre-made non-alcoholic syrup, like
and that's
kind of a. I would think that would be flavor neutral,
yeah.
right?
I think they would not put the rind necessarily in on that one, but you know, taste your syrup. You can directly taste syrup, and even if it is bitter, you can work with that.
So yeah, now we've kind of established that there are some potential pitfalls here, and I would like to think that using this syrup, we don't have that kind of bitterness going on. Let's talk about some flavor pairings, because I mean,
Okay.
this is maybe this is kind of one of those things where we need to go to Total Wine and get some of the syrup and
Do some
throw in
experiments, yeah.
IPAs. But I've seen a lot of people talking about prickly pear on both Facebook
It's
and Reddit.
got its own traction right now, and people are fickle. They ooh, let's try this, and it becomes a thing. And
Well,
that's looks like prickly pear's turn.
this is the nature of homebrewing. A couple of years ago, everybody was talking about pastry stouts, where like, hey, I'm going to make a carrot cake beer, and it's going to be 10 to 12% ABV, and it's going to have carrot and like oat and spice and things like that. And it's going to be heavy. It's going to be like really thick mouthfeel, but it's going to be delicious and sweet.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but
Well,
that was the goal.
that was just a thing. They had so many different desserts that they were trying to make a beer form of,
So
and
let's look
it's.
at, okay, what would we pair with a watermelon? I would stick with lighter flavors, but you have the strawberry and bubblegum flavor in there. So, okay, so I would put a light, this is me, I'd put a light season a spice in there, say like a light cinnamon or maybe a nutmeg, I mean something, and not much of it.
As far as other fruit flavors, I like the idea of lime. I think
Lime is
lime
good.
adds a little brightness. It kind of reinforces that kind of tropical idea of it. I think a little coconut would be nice too.
What do you think about pineapple?
Pineapple is tricky. A little pineapple could be interesting. Pineapple as a flavor, I feel like, is a lot stronger than prickly pear
Fair enough.
and could easily overwhelm. I mean, I think, yeah, prickly pear as a flavor, as my memory of a flavor goes, fairly light, easily overwhelmed. I would take a very light hand with any ingredient you're putting in there. As far as spices and stuff go, I could see maybe a little spruce tip being interesting
Spruce tip would be
or rosehip. Some, again, citrusy note, right?
yeah, that'd be good. And if you, I think in this case, if in secondary you put a little some lime zest in, you might be on a good track there.
The zest is generally going to give you more flavor than the acidity in the juice, and I think that's right on the money. The zest is generally like what we want to use for flavor more than
More than the
the
actual fruit
juice.
itself, the juice itself.
I'll often use both, but I will rarely use the juice and not the zest,
But veggie, you've prickled our imagination here.
Here's another question though.
Yeah.
Honey.
Ooh, happy light. Happy light, like at best a clove. At best a clove or a light spring honey.
Yeah, well, I would think, we're talking maybe an orange blossom if you get a lighter orange
You have
blossom.
to get pretty light orange blossom because the ones I've tried, you can taste the orange. Which would take kind of eliminate your need for brightness from a lime a little bit.
Maybe, yeah. I think it would play nicely with that in that, a little tropical, a little citrusy. I think some maybe Sean's tropical Hawaiian honey. You could get there and you could get interesting ideas from, but I would again worry that you might overpower it that way. I think, we want a light wildflower, maybe an alfalfa or
Alfalfa, I thought that was heavier.
no, alfalfa is very light.
Okay,
It's
good, good. I've never used it, so I don't
yeah,
know.
it's one of those honeys that has a reputation for being like very light and very nondescript, I
Okay,
guess I should
I
say.
put in my mind, I put it in the same category as buckwheat because I've had alfalfa directly.
Yes.
It was strong.
Yeah, no, alfalfa is one of those really light honeys that the basic clover like you would get from a farmer's market on a light time is going to be heavier than an alfalfa from what I've seen.
Okay,
So,
that sounds like a good option then.
is it black locust? It's a varietal that's actually around here a little bit. But it is also one of those very light, kind of sweet. It's a little pricey and it's a little hard to find. But that would be another good one, I would think. Again, light honeys, not a lot of flavor to it. You gotta go a gentle hand with prickly
Yeah,
pear.
because Okay, if watermelon's predominant flavor, watermelon in itself is not a predominant flavor. And we have talked before about if I use a watermelon puree strictly in a bucket with some honey and fermented, it's probably going to taste more like a traditional than a watermelon. It's that light. So if watermelon's your primary flavor, be gentle. You have a very light hand. But great question. I love that question. That caused a lot of discussion here.
That's a fun one. And I've stated before, like if I'm going to make a watermelon mead with using whole watermelon, I'm probably going to freeze distill the juice before I even start fermenting it, because like you got to do something to get your flavor intensity up on that.
Yeah. I remember in shades of adding freeze-dried strawberry to my strawberry and how much of that I added.
I saw a recipe on Reddit the other day too, that was actually like they put freeze-dried strawberries in up front just to bump the strawberry flavor on top of. I think they were using 20 to 25 pounds of like
Freeze-dried strawberries?
no of hood strawberries,
Okay.
and then another like half a pound of freeze-dried strawberries on top of it in a 5 gallon batch.
Wow.
So they were definitely pushing, and this was like strawberries was one of several flavors. It was not just strawberry, but they were going for like a strawberry dessert style. I'll have to try and find that one. It was a fun,
That sounds interesting. I got
that's probably like an off topic, off mic conversation,
Yeah.
just a hey, look at this fun thing I saw,
Oh, in case you guys didn't realize, this conversation doesn't stop when the mic stops.
Oh no.
We keep going.
Yeah, this is, we are close friends in real life. So, like during the week, this is, hey, look at this stupid thing I found, buddy.
And why is there more stupid things than good than we found so far?
Mean, have you been on the internet lately?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, no, there's something to be said for algorithm engagement. People just like, the computers are pushing whatever we will engage with for a little bit. And hey, thanks for finding us, guys.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so is there anything else we got here?
Yeah, I think I found one more that was just an interesting little tidbit, and we're playing mailbag,
Yeah.
so to speak.
We
Looking
said we
for,
would too.
yeah,
This is
this
not new.
is,
This is not a sudden change.
yeah, these are small ideas we found, but this one was this is another one from R. Mead. This is user H4M, so like ham, slash, no, not slash, H4M ham, dash sandwich. And this was like yesterday this was published. Added black tea to a plain mead.
Ooh.
Dot dot dot. Regretting it.
Really?
I heard adding a cup of strong black tea can really enhance a mead and its flavor. I'm not enjoying it at all, unfortunately. I added one cup of it to my 1 gallon of mead, and it almost tastes perfumey or flowery.
Oh my
It's
gosh.
really hard to explain, but it was just a basic wildflower mead using EC 1118, so it was a plain mead to start.
Good job. That's a good start.
Is it's not my favorite yeast, but it
No,
works.
it works,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's fine. Is there anything I can add to remove this flavor and mask it somehow?
No, you cannot add anything to remove the flavor. I'll get my.
Not sure if anyone else has experienced this with meads that don't turn out how you expected, but were able to save it and actually enjoy it. The last thing I want to do is dump it out, if I can still save it and enjoy it. Any suggestions?
Help. You got it. First of all, I don't know what kind of tea you used. I hope it wasn't Lipton. Once upon a time, Lipton was the benchmark of teas in America because the man, Mr. Lipton himself, went to each region of water and formulated his tea to the water in that area.
Which is impressive and interesting.
Yeah,
Like,
which it was a great piece of history, I
I
learned.
have no idea how to even approach that,
Yeah, but he did. Well, I've actually met a chef who altered his donut recipe to the oil he cooked it in. So, these are just the masters of their trade.
Yeah, well, and this is the kind of knowledge and know-how that I, as a mead maker, aspire to with my
Yeah,
meads,
absolutely aspire to. I don't know what kind of tea you used. I hope it was a quality black tea. Number one, you had a 8 ounce cup of strong, you said strong black tea to a gallon
Which
of
is,
it's excessive.
it's 128 ounces, 8 ounces. Yeah, how many cups are in a, there's 2 cups in a pint, 2 pints in a quart,
Quarts
4 quarts in
in
a
a
gallon.
gallon. Yeah, so it's.
So yeah, we're like 1 to 16
Yeah,
ratio.
1-16 ratio here, man. I mean,
That's pretty strong.
that's pretty strong. That may be your biggest problem. All right. My first thing would say to make it better, let it rest. Let it age. That may mellow it out somewhat. Maybe add a little bit of white oak to that to help round
Well,
it.
maybe the You probably have a tannin overload from adding that much tea to a
Okay,
meat
so
at that
the oak
point.
was
So,
would be something you don't want that in that case.
you might try adding a little bit of acid to it to see if that balances it out. Just a little acid blend. Pour a cup out of your mead. Add a pinch of acid blend. Stir it up and give it a sip.
If it makes it better, you're on the right track. If it doesn't, age is probably your best shot at this one. Next time, I mean, when I used my black tea, when I made my Earl Grey tea, I got a quality Earl Grey tea. And I made a standard cup of tea. It wasn't a strong cup of tea, it was a standard I would drink. And I put it in by the ounce until I found the taste come up and hit my tongue the way I wanted it to. That's what I didn't just dump a cup in.
Like we've suggested before, go to your pharmacy and say, "Hey, do you guys have those little syringes you use to give kids medicine?"
Yeah, do it.
Whether you're using it by the ounce or by like the 10 milliliter or 5 milliliter little, segments,
It's a process and it takes time.
do it by
But
taste.
do it by taste. Now, number two, when I made my mead, it was 3 gallon. And I had one cup of tea for that. I could have made more tea and let it cool again, no problem. But I was willing to use one, but I would drink in a sitting cup of tea for 3 gallons of that mead. So, when I first heard, I said, "Oh wow, God, that's gonna sound so good," but it was too strong and florally. And I put it in 1 gallon. Okay, that was my first red flag right there.
So, as far as my suggestions for how to make this salvageable, maybe you can't make this batch salvageable, but we can still use it. So here's my idea. Let's make another batch of like a citrusy sweet meat. Let's do, hey, maybe a lime, maybe an orange, maybe a lemon. Dealer's choice, whatever sounds nice to you. I think lemon and black tea sounds
Lemon
nice
black tea is a classic and it's good.
for a reason, right? So make a sweet lemon tea, make a gallon of that, and then blend. And
Just
maybe you need to make 2 gallons of lemon tea to your 1 gallon of too strong black tea.
yeah, but make a quality lemon tea that you like by itself, and have 2 gallons ready to mix with your 1 gallon of tea
And then
mead.
do that by preference. Like literally get a glass and your whether it's like a graduated cylinder from the science shop down the street or like the injector from, the
The
kids'
pharmacy,
medicine, right? But handle your ratios.
and you go into full scientist mode here because mistakes are not mistakes if you learn from them, and you've got a huge potential here to take a strong floral tea, black floral tea, and make it not only palatable but enjoyable if you're willing to go that far. Honestly, when you see, I think you use the words you dumped a cup into a gallon of the black tea into it. Is that right?
Oh, let me look at that.
So is that what he said? If you did that, okay, I understand. If it was a cup, 8 ounce cup, that's awesome.
I added 1 cup of it to my 1 gallon of
Okay, you
mead.
add it. I think you stop at an ounce, especially in a gallon. I think you're pushing it, pardon me, pushing it at an ounce.
I would say max quarter cup,
Yeah, that's 2 ounces. So, but you have when you're flavoring tea from an external flavoring, like adding tea to mead, like I've done this, and Jeff's tried it. It's actually not bad, but it's a gentle flavor amongst the mead.
Yeah, you gotta measure this out, and you gotta it takes a level of caution. The other thing I could suggest here, and this is again like we're playing a add different flavors to combat this. Go to like your Whole Foods or your natural grocers or whatever the hippy dippy kind of like Whole Food kind of place in your store, your town. They have an entire aisle of concentrated fruit juices. You could add a fruit juice concentrate. Again, measure it, do some.
And to be very delicate with this.
But if you find something that has, I think acidity and sweetness are the ways to go because you have a lot of floral notes from this apparently, and you have a lot of tannin from the tea. So, if you can bump both the sweetness and a little bit of acidity to compensate, you won't hide it, but you can complement it.
And you can and you can and you, mellow, you can make it such not a harsh reality in your mouth. And what we're and what and you know you, and you said, can you make this drinkable? I believe is what you wanted to make it. enjoyable.
Yeah.
But it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have to be willing to put in the work.
Yeah. This is, like Chris says, this is a great learning experience.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And, right? And I'm glad you want to save it, not dump it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you're not going to have to dump it.
You might still have to dump
it. You might still have to dump it. But it's not the end of the road.
The fun thing for me, as far as a mead maker, is that mead can be one of those great times where you can combine art and science.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, I'm a science nerd.
Yeah.
You guys have listened. If you've listened to more than two episodes of this show, you know I'm a nerd when it comes to science.
And you know I'm more about the art.
I still love the art, though. And, you know, there is that saying, as an artist, sometimes you have to kill your darlings. You have to kill your children.
Yeah.
You have this great idea, and you really want it to work, but it doesn't. And it's like killing your own child.
Because you put that much time and effort into it.
You birthed this thing, man.
Oh, man, you did. And, I mean... And it's sad, and we get it. We've had to, you know, kill some of our children, too. But the bottom line is, can you salvage this? Yeah, you could potentially salvage this.
You could at least make this drinkable for you. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of batches I have done where, like, did I offer it to my friends when they came over for a game night or a dinner party or whatever?
No.
Did I drink this alone because I wanted to get a little tipsy on a night? Like, on Tuesday, it was just a hard day at work, and I needed something to take the edge off?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it was just me and my wife drank it.
Sure.
And it wasn't great, but it was pleasant enough that we could enjoy a glass together. And we did.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish you all the luck in that. I mean, I hope... tell us more of what you do.
Yeah. Now, if you happen to listen to the episode and take some of this advice, shoot, let us know.
Yeah.
info@themeadhouse.com or find us on Facebook.
And please let us know. We'd love to hear about your progress, about what you did. If you saved it, if you couldn't. I mean, knowledge is what you learn yourself, and wisdom is what you learn from others, and we could use your wisdom too, man.
Absolutely. And if anybody listening here at home has had a similar experience with, you know, a tea coming through too strong or another ingredient coming through too strong, and you had an experience saving it and you succeeded at it, I would love to hear about that.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, reach out, guys.
I mean, usually when I'm crying as I'm pouring a bucket out, because mine are buckets, I mean, and tears flow, man. But
or a couple of times where I've had to clean up a batch with a mop.
that's heartbreaking. Yeah. We get it.
Yeah.
But hey, thank you for joining us today on the Mead House. I mean, keep the comments coming in. We're gonna find you on Reddit, we're gonna find you everywhere we can, but I would love for you to tell us what you want to hear and what you need help with, and see, we'd love to do this again. This is actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, this was just some random stuff we found that kind of, are we doing a mailbag episode? I guess we're doing a mailbag episode. So, yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Enjoyed
it. We might do this again next week.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
I mean,
let's see what we can find.
You know, reach out to us and we'll kind of
see what we got.
Yeah, from there.
Hey, Jeff, great being here again.
Chris, it was a lot of fun.
We'll see you all later. Take care.